With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Back, run like a wild man.
I watched you struggle and I watched you wrestle with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct turn here, stadium time is 8:30 on the dot, Central Standard Time. It's still daylight time, I guess. I'm going to take my script. Your digital audio devices tune in the Orange and True podcast, harbored by collegeandmagnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. I am Drew Croson, at SonicCrow2 on Twitter, at SonicCrow on Venmo, coming to you live from the nurturing confines of the Republic of Texas. To one side of me, via the magic of the internet, is Ryan Starrett, at Ryan S. Starrett. The S is for staying at home.
Yep.
The other side of me, giving you...
That's all I got.
It's good. Dynamite. The other side of me... giving you full Fort Payne ASMR from Auburn, Alabama, and points unknown, the AU chief.
60 minutes.
That's what the S is for.
That's what the S... Yeah, you're right. The S should have been for 60 minutes. Dang. All right. That's the AU chief. Also joining us today on a somber podcast. Somber as a nation for other reasons. Somber as an Auburn nation. For one reason, the passing of the great Pat Dye, and joining us to give some perspective on that is Josh Black and James Jones. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good evening.
So, let's see. For me, as I've spoken about a lot on this platform, my Auburn sports consciousness did not begin until 2000. Yeah, about 2000, 2001, when my brother went to college at Auburn. So I had no idea who Pat Dye was, and I didn't really know anything about Pat Dye until I came to Auburn in 04. Ryan is 12 years old, so he doesn't know anything about Pat Dye either.
Yeah, Pat Dye is, he was just like Shug to me. I mean, he was just somebody from the before time. I don't know.
Ryan is probably as far away from Pat Dye being the coach. Ryan's tenure at Auburn is as far from Pat Dye being the coach, probably as mine is from Doug Barfield.
Yeah, easily.
Which is a wild thought.
Maybe more.
Yeah. Good Lord, Ryan. More.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then Chief, you probably know a little bit about the Pat Dye era, maybe even have some recollection. But Josh and James, I know... sat through some Pat Dye games, perhaps.
Yep, absolutely.
So, James, when you first saw that Coach Pat Dye had passed, what was your thought?
You knew it was a possibility after him being diagnosed with COVID, obviously kidney problems. He had done some hard living, and being 80 years old, it was always a possibility, but it seemed like he had gotten through the worst of that. And then, as it has with so many people, it just kind of came on suddenly. And it seems like just kind of the capper on a 2020 that's not even halfway over yet. And then since then, it's just been remembering what he stood for and what he brought for us.
Now, what would you say that is, James? Like, if you could say, what does Pat Dye mean to you as a coach?
Pat Dye is the reason Auburn is what it is today. You think about not just football, but he was athletic director from 81 to 92 as well as being the I think until 92, but as well as being the football coach, he was athletic director. So he hired Sonny Smith. He hired Hal Baird. He hired Joe Champy. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that those are, in their respective sports, some of the best coaches that Auburn's ever had. In basketball, you could argue Bruce or Joel Eaves, but I mean, Sonny's right there with them. Baseball, it's Hal Baird's close to the top, if not the top, and Joe is still the standard in the women's game, in women's basketball. So Pat was responsible for all of that.
Hired David Marks for the swim team too.
That's true. Yeah, sure. You're absolutely right. So when you take all of that into effect, his effect on Auburn is substantial. Then you throw in football, which is what pays the bills. And he took Auburn from, I can't even describe how far down Auburn was as a program in the 80s. My dad would do, I've been told this afterwards because I was born in 84, but my dad would do impressions of Doug Barfield. And Coach, what are you going to do this week? Lose again? And I think kind of the symbol of it more than anything else. You had in 1980, Auburn played Tennessee at home, opening up, there's the first big game after the West upper deck was added, if I've got my directions right. After the West upper deck was added, Tennessee comes to town and beats Auburn 42-0. To date, it's now tied for the worst loss at home in Auburn history with the Texas A&M game in 2012. But it's still tied all these years later that you lose that game 42-0. 1 year later, in Knoxville, Coach Dye takes a team that didn't have any more talent, probably might even be less talent, up to Knoxville and loses 10-7 in a game that Auburn had the ball in Tennessee territory at the end. They had a chance to win that game. And that's where the famous quote about if you lay your guts on the line, you may come away empty handed, but you just got to lay them on the line again and again. That's where that came from. And I think that contrast is the best description of what of the change of what Pat Dye brought to Auburn.
Amen.
That's probably my favorite Absolutely. Pat Dye YouTube clip is that one. And I wish Jack would start the show with that this time. As much as I love the Wrestling with Them Angels quote, the laying the guts on the line again and again with his accent is the most perfect Auburn sentiment there's ever been.
Yep.
Josh, what about you? Like, you and I have had this conversation a million times about best Auburn coach versus most important Auburn coach aren't the same conversation, but because most important Auburn coach is Pat Dye.
He's also the best. My reaction today, when I got the news, the only thought I had was I can't let my dad find out about this by anybody else. The reason why I felt that way was because outside of my dad and my grandfather, I don't think there's another person who's influenced why I love Auburn more than Coach Dye. Coach Dye is easily the best coach we've ever had, despite getting screwed out of not winning a national championship in 1983, despite not having as many wins as Coach Jordan, and despite being tied for as many wins as Mike Donahue. If you look at, it's easy to say 12 years, because 90 through 92 are in there and, they have to be accounted for, but we had a cloud around us in 91. That was his second losing season after 81. And it was because of the scandal that I don't have any problem touching on. In 92, everybody knew Coach Dye was going to end up having to step aside and things just fell apart, even though the team kept playing hard for him. But if you just look at the stretch from 81 until 89, I think people need to understand the mindset of Auburn when Coach Dye got there in 81 and closest thing I can compare it to is, if you will, remember what it was like going into the Georgia game in 2012 after we got beat by 42 points to Texas A&M. Remember how defeated it was coming out of that game when we got shut out 38-0, knowing that we still had to go to Tuscaloosa. We were winless in the SEC in Doug Barfield's last year. It's the last time that had happened before 2012. Okay, so add on the way you felt in 2012 in November of that year. Add on to that that your biggest rival had beaten you when Coach Dye got there 8 years in a row at that time. And their head football coach, who's the greatest in the history of the sport, has gotten 314 wins, and they're going to shoot for getting his 315th record-setting win at Legion Field when they play Auburn. So imagine when your head coach of a team that was a 500 ball club at the time, they were 5-5, goes up to midfield to a guy who he'd worked for 9 years, and for all that we can disparage about Alabama, Coach Dye had a lot of respect for Coach Bryant. Looked at him dead in the eye and said, "Coach, we're fixing to take it to your team's ass." And Coach Bryant said, "Are you trying to scare me?" He said, "No, I'm telling you what we're fixing to do." And that was a four-quarter football game that we got beat 28-17, but there was something different in the air. What Coach Dye did in that year and in the next year was instill hope in Auburn. And the second time that he instilled hope that we were climbing a mountain was when Herschel Walker and Georgia came to town, and they left that game victors, but they left that game in a much closer fought game in Jordan-Hare Stadium than they ever expected to come into. And you could tell that something, the proverbial tide, I hate saying a pun like that, but the proverbial tide was changing. And that all came to fruition when Bo Jackson went over the top of the goal line at Legion Field 2 weeks later in Birmingham. Jim Fife later said that Coach Dye told him before the game, he looked at him dead in the eye, real serious, and said, "There's fixing to be a bloodletting in Birmingham next week." And Jim Fife just, whoo, it kind of chills went up his spine. And we got across him. We got to the top of a mountain that we hadn't been to in a long time. And if that had been all that Pat Dye did was start beating Alabama with regularity, he'd be a hero. But Coach Dye the next year took us to national prominence in a season where we deservedly should be national champions. And I was very glad to read today that we actually had a national championship trophy made for that team, and it sat in Coach Dye's home, and they gave that team national championship rings at their reunion last year. They deserve it. So he wins the conference championship. And to this, I remember vividly from the one time I had a serious conversation with him, he kicked himself over 84 and 85 because he knew good and well that we were a better football team than we played that year. But he got rid of the wishbone after 85, put us back to work. And what happens? But, 86 comes around, and I think we lost, I think it was either two or three football games, but I think we lost, two games, but we lost them by combined, what was it, James, 4 or 5 points? I mean, it was something insane.
Yeah, lost by one to Florida.
And lost to Georgia.
By four to Georgia.
You lost two games by a total of 5 points. And then he rings off three straight SEC championships. If it was just for that, he would be the greatest coach in our history. But in addition to that, you have to think about what the state was at the time of losing Coach Bryant and the icon and the power figure that he was. And Coach Dye, knowing how they worked over there, knowing their inner workings, whether you want to call that how they managed to get such successful players or what have you, Coach Dye knew the secret to their success, and he took what they had and he brought it to Auburn, and it drove them crazy. And he looked them dead in the eye with a lot of people that he was on the same sideline with in the 70s and was able to, not with intimidation, but with loving on them, shaking their hands, hugging Steve Sloan, Alabama's AD at the time, broke them down and got them to commit to coming to Auburn. And if you really want to talk about the legacy of Coach Dye, college football, Auburn University and the University of Alabama on the home campus each year that all is due to Coach Dye. You know, you see far less neutral site rivalries now. I mean, outside of, you know, Oklahoma and Texas and Florida, Georgia, I can't think of any. And you've seen, you know, local economies and stadiums expand because of that. And truly, for us, we have something every other year on the last weekend in November where we know whether we're the better team or not. Alabama's fixing to get their ass kicked because they're playing in Jordan-Hare Stadium. And they didn't they never had to experience anything like that and never would without Pat Dye. Yep. And there's no more instrumental figure in the history of our program. I said this on Twitter, and I mean it. I truly believe Coach Jordan taught us what it meant to be an Auburn man. And I think that to this day, Pat Sullivan is one of the greatest examples of what an Auburn man is. But Coach Dye showed us what an Auburn man's potential is and that it's limitless. And, you know, in my one real conversation with him, which was, you know, amazing, it was the night of the national championship after the game in the hotel lobby at the Phoenician where the media hotel was and he was staying. He flat told us, he said, "I got us to the river's edge several times, but I couldn't cross it. But boys, tonight we crossed it." And he just had this big grin on his face as he was sipping his whiskey. And I think people who unfortunately never got to live through that era, you know, it's easy to say you need to pay your respects to the past, but everything that Auburn University has, every good memory that you have as a student of what Jordan-Hare Stadium is, what you love about Auburn football, the good memories that you've experienced, they're because of Pat Dye.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, that's really good. That's a good word. Chief, do you have anything you want to add about, like, when you think about Pat Dye, what do you think of?
I just think of his voice, man. He's got a unique voice. He sounds like everybody's South Alabama granddad is what he sounds like. I just loved hearing him talk. Anytime he talked, just listen. Cause it was just that slow Southern drawl, and he always had a purpose to what he was saying, usually, unless he'd had a little too much of his, favorite whiskey. But even then he was funny. I became an Auburn fan at the end. In 1992 is pretty much when I pledged my allegiance to Auburn. And that was sort of the end, of Pat Dye. And I remember all that. I remember being sad for no real reason other than, oh, man, this stinks. There's coaches leaving or whatever. My mom had to explain to me what had happened. But it's my experience with Pat Dye is just going back and watching things on YouTube, watching old games. And like I said, just listening to him. I wonder if that's most people around our ages memories of him are just hearing him talk. And the thing I also think of is how he was gone from the program for 5 years, 6 years, I think, because of some things inside the athletic department that had happened. And he was gone, and it was great to have him back when Gene Chizik became head coach. And he had a lot to do with that, as I'm sure Josh could tell us all, that he had a lot. He liked Coach Chizik. It's not the Machiavellian string pulling that Paul Feinbaum or somebody wants to say that Coach Dye had within the program, but he had influence. I mean, he's the guy that built the program. You're going to listen to the guy. I was just so glad to have him back at that point and not have to only listen to him on a coach's show with Gene Stallings, sponsored by Crane Works. Funny enough, I think of Crane Works whenever I think of coach die too. But
well, you know, Paul, you need a crane. We can get you a crane.
Yes. Yes. Oh man. But yeah, Coach dies. I mean, I can't say anything more than Josh said. His importance to this program and the state. You have to think. Alabama doesn't get Nick Saban without Coach Dye because they don't have that stadium. They don't have an on-campus stadium like they have when they hire Saban. It wasn't as nice then as it is now, but without that, he's not coming there to play all his games up in Birmingham, in a just complete crap hole. Like, you kidding me? So, I think the whole state, and I hate to do that whole, well, it's good for the state, but I mean, honestly, he, like Josh said, what he did getting those games on campuses changed the landscape of college football. And he's not just an Auburn legend. He's a college football legend. He meant a lot to college football. And hopefully the more time that goes by, the less the stupid probation stuff and the way he had to leave here matters to people. There's always going to be some people that'll always matter to him, but it doesn't matter to me. That was college football then too.
I think it's something that if that exact same scenario happened today, the current college football Twitter reaction to it is completely the opposite of what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's quite literally a kid was trying to feed his family and they wanted to make sure he had a young kid. Now I have my issues with Eric Ramsey and his wife. And if anybody's ever seen the video of the Hall of Fame bowl game, I sincerely doubt that his son's given name is Eric Ahmad Rashad Ramsey. And that's just the way his wife was. But at the end of the day, that's what brought Pat Dye down, was making sure a kid could feed his family. And then he was keeping recordings of it just in case he never made it in the pros, which tells you something about his character.
And the attorney who's now in jail, Donald Watkins, who represented Eric Ramsey, this could be a conspiracy theory, but I believe that taking that game out of Birmingham, I think there was an agenda against Coach Dye to get him for it.
It's exactly what I was going to say. If he doesn't whip Alabama's ass so many times and get that game moved out of Birmingham, none of that ever comes to light.
There was a price to be paid for it. But you know what? I'll say this about that time, and I'll say this because a couple of his former players are very close to me and my family, two of them being Ben Tamborello and Chet Williams. Coach Dye loved his players. You know, the guy had a lot of flaws, and I'm sure that there's some flaws that if you get close to his family, you may not want to find out about all of them. But there's no questioning that Coach Dye was a player's coach and loved his players. You know, when I hear Ben Tamborello texting me today saying, outside of my father, nobody's had a greater influence on my life than Pat Dye, when I think about the fact that Chet Williams got into trouble and Coach Dye threw him off the team, he goes into his dorm room that night and his teammate Kyle Collins prays a sinner's prayer with him and he accepts Christ into his life. Chet goes into Coach Dye's office the next day to tell him that, and Coach Dye tells him, let's just take it one day at a time, and gives him a second chance. And all of the players that have benefited from that, that's what I think Pat Dye's legacy is. But when I think of the Eric Ramsey situation, I think of a guy who we were probably doing what everybody else was doing, but in that case, I do think that Coach Dye was thinking, we got to try and help this kid. He's struggling. He's got a kid. You know, we got to do what we can to take care of him. And there's a genuineness to that NCAA rules don't allow. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make you a sinner to try and do the right thing for somebody else.
Yeah,
it just makes you a rule breaker. And I'll never fault Pat Dye for trying to take care of one of his players and trying to do the right thing by helping them when they honestly needed the help. I fault the player for how they responded to it by turning their back on him. And that's what hurts so much about it. Coach Dye got betrayed by a player when he cared about that player.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But you know what he never did? He never complained about it. You never heard him go off on Eric Ramsey after he got fired.
That's true.
He spit in the dirt and moved it on.
Yep.
So I don't know if you guys have watched the ESPN, like, 150 years of college football documentary they did. It's all right. But Pat Dye's in it quite a bit, especially the section they did about football in the South. And he talks about, like, you know, growing up a sharecropper's son. And I think, you know, it cannot be overstated how Pat Dye's background of literally being dirt poor to being the head coach at Auburn played into his ability to relate to and reach out to the college football player in the Southeast.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was an amazing thing. Yeah. Like, you don't see that a lot. Like, even like Gus right now, Auburn's got a coach who started out as a chemistry teacher or whatever, and now is the head coach at Auburn making whatever, $5 million a year. Whereas now, that seems crazy, but it's even crazier to think of a kid who grew up literally dirt poor as the son of a sharecropper that grew up to be the guy who got the Auburn-Alabama game moved to Auburn every other year. That's an amazing story.
Absolutely.
He was famous for saying that, you know, while he grew up in a different environment than an inner city black kid may have, that he knew how to connect with them because he grew up poor. And he understood hard work, and he knew how to motivate somebody that grew up poor, who knew that they had to fight, scratch, and claw for everything that they had. And I mean, everything about it was just his time at Auburn was right place, right time, right person. And it is truly that attitude has shaped our identity.
Yeah. And we haven't even talked about how he, you know, brought maybe one of the greatest all-around athletes of all time. Not maybe. One of the greatest all-around athletes of all time to Auburn, and Bo Jackson. I mean, that was him.
That was high praise for Tracy Rocker.
Yeah.
And Frank Thomas.
Not just Bo, but I mean, he half-recruited Frank Thomas. Of course, Frank Thomas being the great baseball player he was, Hal Baird had something in that too. But
Coach Dye kept him on a football scholarship.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when you got your football coach as your AD. Make some things happen for you.
Yeah. Keep things a little easier for you.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, hiring Sonny Smith and bringing in – and that brought in Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
So while he was AD, some of the greatest athletes in Auburn history came through in Bo – Charles and Frank Thomas, Vicky Orr, Ruthie Bolton, Roddy Gaines, I believe would have been through there. So
Hall of Famers, man.
Absolutely. Quite literally the only SEC player in the Hall of Fame is Frank Thomas.
Yeah. Which is, And maybe that's forever, because Raphael and Will Clark might not ever get him.
Huddy might. No?
Braves Hall of Fame.
The Braves Hall of Fame.
let's not – and James, to your point, and also Chief, to yours about Bo, you know, Bo was a really hot target between Auburn and Alabama, but he wasn't widely recruited outside the state because it was widely known he wanted to stay close to home. And so – Bo was not as high profile of a recruit as another guy that he signed in Ben Tamborello. Ben Tamborello was coveted by most every program in the South and grew up an Alabama fan. And God bless him, Ben's a friend and also sold my last house for me and helped me buy this one. He's a great realtor if you're interested in the Birmingham area. But Ben's told me, and this story's been documented several times, how Coach Bryant came to his house And Ben sat there next to his mom on the couch, and Coach Bryant, the chair next to him, and Ben just had his head in his hands, crying his eyes out, because he had to tell Coach Bryant, no, yeah. He's going to Auburn, because Coach Dye had that kind of an impact. And that, just as much as Coach Bryant's age and health problems, was what drove him to finally make the decision that if he can't get the kids that grew up wanting to come to Alabama to come there, then, you know, this thing has shifted. And, you know, that's the kind of recruiter he was, and the kind of guy he was as a force in that early on in his tenure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, and even to the end, Stan White grew up Alabama fan his entire life, and Pat Dye got him to come to Auburn and finish with an undefeated season. In 93.
Pat Dye laid that pipeline to Dillard High School.
That's true, too.
Yeah, yes, sir.
The 93 team does not happen. And really, 94 going 9-1-1. I mean, that was 20 wins out of 22 games in 2 years, and none of that happens without Pat Dye.
Yeah, absolutely not.
You can say he's the reason that we won the Iron Bowl this year. He recruited Pat Nix. We get Bo Nix. We beat Alabama in 2019.
Were they recruiting juniors back then?
I'm only calling him Bonix, by the way. I'm calling Bo Nix Bonix from here on out.
No, Pat Nix was here in 92. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
Coach Dye signed Pat Nix.
He's
signed Damian Craig, too, if I'm not mistaken, right?
He would have recruited in 93. He recruited him for sure.
Yeah. If Coach Dye, if Eric Ramsey never happens, I've long been of the belief, because I'll give Terry Bowden credit for one thing. I think Terry Bowden was one hell of a play caller.
Yeah.
Much thanks to Tommy Bowden's brother, who was already on staff at Auburn under Coach Dye in 92.
Yep.
If Coach Dye does not get fired, does he finally take us to the promised land, or are we in a situation because of Spurrier and because of Nebraska where, I mean, what's the end story here? Because I have a theory on this. What do y'all...
Well, it's surprising to me that, you know, when I heard he passed today, I kind of figured he was probably pushing 90, not 80. Oh, so doing the backwards math in my head, I didn't realize he was barely into his 50s. He essentially retired
when he stepped down, 53 years old. By the way,
so Gus, I mean, how long would he have been at Auburn?
I was about to say Gus is older than he is.
Right.
He was.
This is part of my theory of people in the 80s and 70s. Decade. Yeah, people in the 70s and 80s looked so much older than they do now. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Look how old Bear Bryant looks in those photos, and realize that I think Nick Saban's older now than Bear Bryant was when he retired.
He absolutely is.
And Bear Bryant looks like he was a corpse walking around the sideline for some of those games.
Yeah, he looked like a corpse for a good last 20 years of his life. So.
Chief, I mean, I'll do this for you. When Coach Bryant coached his last game in the Liberty Bowl, he was 69 years old.
Nice.
This is part of my this is a game I play of Jerry Jones or who's older, Jerry Jones or this other person. And like Jerry Jones is older than Pat Dye,
mm-hmm.
and is the same age as Jimmy Johnson. So Jimmy Johnson doesn't look old at all. But yeah, so look, Jimmy Johnson's older than Pat Dye.
So does Coach Dye get us to the promised land, James, in your opinion?
With what Spurrier was building, unless he completely, and he saw the path that football was taking when he hired Tommy Bowden.
Yeah.
If he completely lets go of, you know, you run the ball, you stop the run, you got to be sound in the kicking game. If he lets go of that, there's a possibility sometime between 93, 94, 95 that we get there. But at that same time, you're running into an absolute buzzsaw in Nebraska if you do get there. And Nebraska had at that time, I don't see that happening, especially considering what they did to a really talented Florida team in 95.
Right.
Chief?
Yeah, I think that's about the same. It's... God, it's just it's hard to those Nebraska teams were ridiculous, and the Florida teams were hard to play. Like who knows if he gets it done against them? I don't know. But
when you got Tennessee coming to power, yeah, mid-90s too.
I was going
to
say the same thing.
And that's what I want to touch on. Rodney Garner was an assistant coach under Terry Bowden until Terry fired him and Wayne Hall, our defensive coordinator. Rodney Garner went to Tennessee and signed a quarterback out of Mobile by the name of T. Martin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think somewhere in 96 to 98, he may have had his shot.
Yeah.
I really do believe that.
And then he'd still be our coach.
I mean, look, he'd be our Bill Snyder, man. If he takes the promised land, he's here as long as
he wants. If he wins 83, 93, and 98, he's still here.
All he had to do was get to be 70 to coach Cam Newton at Auburn.
The only time that Pat Dye tried to get another job after he left Auburn was in 2001 after Georgia fired Jim Donnan. He threw his name into the ringer for like a hot second for that job, and they were like, no, man, you've been out of the game for 10 years. But,
yeah.
Could you imagine if someone hired him?
He still thought he had something in him at that point. I mean, he at least considered it.
That's like Herm Edwards getting hired after 10 years out.
But he would have only been 62, 63.
Right.
61 in 2001.
He's still almost not that old. He's a decade younger than Nick Saban today.
Yeah. Man alive.
He's he did some hard living, though.
Right.
He is not eating a turkey salad for lunch every single day.
That's a good point, James. And I, as much as I hate the way that it ended at Auburn for Coach Dye in 92, I don't think Coach Dye lives to 80 if he doesn't end at 52 or 3 or whenever he got done. I think saved his life. I really do. I think that the stress of that, it finally got to a point because his liver was acting up on him for some strange reason.
man.
I think that Coach Dye getting out of coaching is why we were able to enjoy him for so long after that.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Let me ask you guys this question.
Go ahead, Crow.
I was going to ask Josh and James, what was your favorite, Josh first, what was your favorite game you remember in attendance that Pat Dye was the coach?
1990 Florida State. That completion that Stan White had on fourth down and kicking that game-winning field goal after we had the most unbelievable sack on fourth down of that Florida State quarterback's first name.
Casey Weldon.
Casey Weldon. I was about to say it was something Weldon. We sat Casey Weldon on fourth down. They tripped about 10 yards backwards to put us in field decent field position. Stan White still needed to get us a first down. We did nothing on the first three downs, and then on fourth down, Stan White has what was the best throw of his career until 1993, in my opinion, as a true freshman, and we kick a game-winning field goal to beat Florida State in one of the wildest games I've ever seen in Jordan-Hare Stadium to this day.
All right, James, same question.
Yeah, for me, it's the first one I remember, and it's Florida in 89. And I think I've told this on Twitter a few times, but there were games I went to before them, but I didn't really remember them. And for some reason, this is the first one I remember. And I was just asking the whole game, how many points do we have? How many points do we have? How many points? And it was always zero. And then finally, I asked my dad how many points we have. We got 3. All right. How many do they have? 7. Crap. And that was how it went. And, you know, gosh, this is 31 years later, but there's not a lot I remember. But I remember that stadium absolutely coming unglued as Shane Wasdin catches a game-winning touchdown pass on 4th and 10. Because for some reason, I mean, it was the simplest play. Auburn ran 4 verts. It's the schoolyard play. It's the play that made Mike Leach the coach that he is today. It's, we got 4 guys out here, everybody go deep. And for some reason, Florida didn't cover Shane Watson. I don't know if it was because he's like 5'9 and white, but they didn't cover him. And there's a great picture that you can still find of him kind of tripping over himself as he catches that ball in the end zone. And it was in the northeast corner where the visiting fans are, and you can see all it's right in front of the Florida cheerleaders. It's absolutely great. And winning that game meant that Emmitt Smith never beat Auburn. It was what kind of catapulted that team onto its third straight SEC title. They had lost to Tennessee earlier in the year. That was the team that had wrestled with them Angels. They had squeaked by LSU. They'd lost to Florida State and Tallahassee. They had not looked impressive against Mississippi State, but Florida came to town with an eventual Heisman winner and scored 7 points on a short field. Auburn had a turnover very early in the game, and Florida turned it into a touchdown, but that was all they would score. Won that game, won homecoming the next week, beat Georgia in Athens, and then, of course, winning the Iron Bowl to cause the split title, the three-way split between us and Tennessee and Alabama. But that 89 Florida game is the first one I really remember of any of the games that I've been to. And it's probably 120 in that stadium by now, maybe even 130. I've lost count by now, but that's still my favorite. At least of the Coach Dye games by far.
James, you reminded me of something by saying that, because you said Florida, we went on to play homecoming, and then Georgia and Alabama. We actually got a break that year because we had a homecoming game. When anybody wants to complain about how hard our schedule is, look, y'all just need to understand something. It's been this way for a long time. Mm-hmm. Because if you go back and look in the 80s, we weren't just playing Georgia and Alabama at the end of the year. We're playing Florida and then Georgia and then Alabama. And Florida's record book may not look like what it was, but Florida on the field won, what was it, at least one or two SEC championships that got vacated because of cheating.
at least 84.
Our schedule was a murderer's row in November, and that's after playing Johnny Majors Tennessee at the last weekend of September. Usually play in a Georgia Tech team who was formidable, even though we always kicked their ass. And then, oh, by the way, you're usually scheduling a Bobby Bowden Florida State team that's got a chip on their shoulder. Those schedules in the 80s were insane, and for what Coach Dye did with that was just unbelievable. And something you also reminded me of about Emmitt Smith, I'm not going to out the person that told me this, but the longstanding story has been that Emmitt Smith wanted to come to Auburn, but his mother didn't like what she was hearing about one of our players who had never learned to read or something like that while he was at Auburn. And that very well may be true about the kid never learned to read while he was there. I mean, but the reason why Emmitt Smith didn't come to Auburn is because Florida had late money and paid him to get to Florida. And why Emmitt was so disappointed after that was because he desperately wanted to come to Auburn, and when he didn't come, he desperately wanted to beat Auburn, and he never got the shot.
Hate it for him.
Yeah.
Hate it for him.
And hate to see
it. I'm not going to hear a lot of Emmitt Smith disparity on this, disparaging Emmitt Smith on this podcast.
I understand, but
and he went on to do nothing.
You think about it, though. I mean, If you add him to the 87, 88, 89 teams, I mean, those teams already won the SEC title. They lost five games in a span of 3 years, and one of those was a bowl game.
One of my favorite recruiting what-ifs.
The other thing you have to remember about this point in time is that football in the South, when Dye took over, people look down at football in the South is not thought of like it is now. And Coach Dye had a lot to do with that. Mm-hmm. Pulling up the whole reputation of football in the South. It didn't fully, you know, people didn't fully realize how good it was here until later in the 90s, I would probably say. I mean, and there was Florida. Everybody loved that Florida team because they threw the ball so god dang much in the mid to,
and Steve Spurrier's polo shirts were so sweet.
Yeah. I mean, and they had the big personality of Steve Spurrier. He was fun to. They didn't call him memes back then, but he was fun to meme with the visor and all that stuff. But yeah, Coach Dye was doing all this at a time when people didn't think much of football in the South. The SEC was not thought of that well. I don't know what my point was, that just to point that out.
Could you imagine a coach that sounds like Pat Dye in 2020? Like a coach, like right now, Ed Orgeron. Coach O is the closest Louisiana thing version to a coach that just sounds so of his place and time.
You know, Coach O really might be. He's a lot like Coach Dye. That's
a longtime defensive position coach.
Yeah, that.
This is his dream job.
I don't. Auburn wasn't Coach Dye's dream job.
Wyoming was
obviously,
clearly.
I mean, it became his dream job. He loved it more than he loved anywhere else in the world. But it just the way, I mean, just the personalities of just loving your players, and the players knowing it. Coach O is probably the closest we got right now. Just the way he shows it, wears it on his sleeve like that. I think Coach Malzahn loves his players too, but you don't see that. It's not the same. You don't see it like you saw with Coach Dye. You don't see Coach Dye almost, or Coach Malzahn almost breaking down in tears talking to his players.
And Coach Malzahn doesn't sound like
no doubt.
Yeah.
Coach Malzahn doesn't sound like he's trying to talk through a mouthful of Lochipoca syrup.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about LSU, Ed Orgeron sounds like LSU.
Right.
Coach Dash sounds like Auburn.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I think if a coach sounded like that, like I said, like
West,
a syrup in his
West
mouth,
Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be, I think today people would just love it.
Georgia's Dooley. The only saving grace about Georgia's time that they got two of our alumnus on their coaching staff, and it's Dooley, because I don't know if y'all know this. I wasn't even alive when this happened, but Auburn graduate Vince Dooley did win a national championship at Georgia on January the 1st, 1981.
Wow. That sounds like a long time ago.
Did you have to read that off a stone tablet?
I just had to transcribe it from Sanskrit. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, I do have an app. That was, guys, you won't believe this. That was 14,396 days.
Wow.
The last time Georgia did anything positive.
The game was broadcasted via smoke signal.
What is that in dog ears?
That's what are they on? Like a 12, something like that?
And I'm not, Crow, I'm not trying to run the script on this, but here's some alternate history timelines for you.
Go for it.
Vince Dooley takes the Auburn job instead of Pat Dye. Mm-hmm. Pat Dye's the next head coach at Georgia.
Yeah.
Unless he's not, and Irk Russell, who's a legend at Georgia Southern and also four-sport Auburn letterman, takes the Georgia job. Pat Dye's the next coach at Alabama.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. That's disgusting.
Yeah. And God bless Vince Dooley. You know, great coach. There's no way at that point in time in his career, after coaching for 20 years, he would have had the energy to do what Coach Dye did. Yeah. We're a totally different program if we have Dooley instead of Coach Dye. And Alabama probably maintains dominance throughout the 80s if they get Coach Dye.
Well,
I don't think Dye follows the bear, because I think he knew what would have happened. So I think they had to get Perkins to do that. But as soon as they get rid of Perkins, they would not have hired Bill Curry. They would have hired Pat Dye, wherever he was at that point, whether he's at Wyoming or somewhere else.
I don't, you know, if he takes the Georgia job, I don't think they're prying him away from Georgia, but that's the only way. Man, we don't talk enough about how wild it is that Coach Dye went out to Wyoming. Yeah,
there is no wilder thing.
Nobody ever talks about it. He was an All-American at Georgia. He didn't just play football. He was an All-American. Two-time.
Played with Rand Tarkenton.
First All-SEC.
I mean, the parallels between him and Dooley are, I mean, there's a reason those comparisons were always made. They were, you know, they were the same. They just coached at the opposite schools where they went.
Yeah.
Well, back after in those, he left Georgia, he went to go play in the CFL for a couple years and then came back home to play on the Fort Benning Doughboys.
Oh.
To fulfill his ROTC
requirement. That's right.
Don't you know that when Pat Dye was playing in Edmonton and then coaching in Wyoming, that he had the best hunting experiences of his life? I swear he did both those things just to go and kill deer.
Absolutely.
I couldn't imagine him walking into a store in Laramie, Wyoming.
He's like, they got moose up there?
I can't imagine him walking into a store in Laramie, Wyoming and being like, well, like taking him 25 minutes to get his order out. Like, wait, where is this guy from?
Josh, you might know more about it, but what is the story about when he left Wyoming? I mean, if you look online, he says, oh, he never signed a contract.
Right? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He never signed his contract up there.
How does that happen?
He I mean, it happens all the time.
Mike, he pulled the Tony Barbie
contract.
Yeah, the Barbie. He pulls Barbie.
Only don't, wasn't don't put them in the same sentence.
Only wasn't a shitty coach.
I like to think of coaches that never signed their contract, and Mike Price comes to mind for some strange.
Yep.
Oh.
But with that being said, I mean, the whole reason why Auburn got Coach Dye was because Dooley and Bob James, who may or may not have been the governor at the time. He's still big in Alabama politics.
He wasn't
governor at the time. He was going to be governor again in the 90s.
Yeah.
But Dooley and Bob James, after Bob called Dooley because they were teammates under Coach Jordan in the 50s, and said no, Dooley recommended to Bob to call Bobby Lauder and tell him to call Pat Dye. That Pat Dye, he understood how the workings were at Alabama, and it would be he would fit like a glove. And Coach Dye saw that as he wasn't thinking about the potential of replacing Coach Bryant, although I do actually think that Coach Bryant had him pegged as the guy because Coach Dye had won so much at East Carolina. He'd proven he could do it elsewhere. This was his shot because Dooley wasn't going anywhere. He had Herschel Walker in 1980. You know, that'll be a while longer. You know, Lord only knew if Coach Bryant was ever going to retire. So Coach Dye saw that as his shot, and he was so serious about getting the job that on his last interview before he did it, he went ahead and quit up there. Mm-hmm. So he did not – that wasn't a thing. I don't know if he ever signed his contract at Wyoming, but he legit quit. He resigned as Wyoming's head coach before he ever actually had a firm offer to come to Auburn.
Wow.
Man, could you imagine a 2020 coaching carousel in which a coach resigned before a firm offer was given to him by the other school? Twitter would explode. Explode.
And the thing about that is, nobody probably knew about that.
No.
5-6 years down the road.
Whoever the beat writer is for the Laramie Morning Herald or whatever the name of the paper is probably knew, and he couldn't get anybody to listen. By the way, Laramie, Wyoming, beautiful place. Everybody should go visit. I'm surprised Coach Dye left.
Oh, I'd love to go.
Me too. Let's take a break.
Well, we can. I don't actually know what time is because the recording's split into two recordings. I got the whole show so far, but we've split into two recordings. We're somewhere around the 53-minute mark, Jack. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. And we're back. Somewhere around the 53-minute mark. Like I said, we've kind of been sharing some stories and talked about, you know, where Coach Dye ranks among Auburn coaches. And, you know, he is, if not the best, top three best in Auburn, any sport, And no matter what sport, he's the most important. But would you say that the most similar story to right now to what Coach Dye did is what Bruce has done to Auburn basketball, where it was like completely defeated, no one cares, we're going to lose, to we can beat anybody in America.
Doug Barfield. Tony Barbie is Doug Barfield.
Doug Barfield is such a nice person.
What a terrible t-shirt that is. Tony Barbie is Doug Barfield.
That's not fair to Doug. That's not fair to Doug. Honestly, it's not. Because he's a nice guy.
With great shirts. The Doug Barfield era was great for polo shirts.
And I'm pretty sure that old Tone is not a big fan of the old Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, he hates them so much he can't even show up half the time.
Yeah.
Man. I would say that Bruce is the closest thing that we've seen. Because he's turned the program around. I mean, it's like instant turnaround, too. And we struggled in 80 with Coach Dye, and we struggled the first couple years with Coach Pearl. I don't even call that struggling. We just didn't see we weren't in the tournament automatically. But, slowly but surely, we've gotten somewhere.
It's difficult to even think about losing 8 in a row to Alabama. Like, it's difficult to even imagine that as a possibility. And that's with as good as Alabama has been with Coach Saban. Like, it's even with Coach Saban, I would never imagine Auburn could lose 8 in a row.
It's even harder to imagine losing 9 in a row.
So, out of 23 years prior to Coach Dye's arrival, I think we beat them 4 times. We were 4 out of 23, I think. Auburn is 20-18 in the Iron Bowl since 1981. I think that's right. You can check me on my math on that, but I know we have a winning record against Alabama since Coach Dye's arrival.
Yeah, and that's despite having several of our worst years ever in that time period too.
And Alabama having, honestly, I would say an even better, when adjusting for difficulty, an even better coach than Coach Bryant.
Yeah, absolutely. For 10 straight years at this point. 10 of those 40 years at this point.
I thought you were talking about Mike Shula, James, at first.
Well, the most important thing about that, the 89 postgame speech is a big deal, and the video clips of it are all over YouTube. But the 20-year retrospective, which I'm sure that James has somewhere on DVD, and Chief probably does too. Ryan, I don't trust you to respect your history that much, and Crow, you just moved, so you probably got rid of a bunch of stuff.
I don't have a DVD player.
Yeah, fair enough. But it shows the full thing, like where he leads it, where they have a team prayer after all of the speech and everything, and Coach Dye lays it out what it is between us and Alabama that day, and it truly, like, the record difference from before his arrival to after. Really proves this. He said, "This doesn't mean anything about us being better than them. All this means is that you can walk on the same side of the street as they do and hold your head up high because we're equal." And what he did, no one else, I'm convinced no one else, we talked about Dooley, no one else could have done that for Auburn. No one. We are not who we are. We cannot look the behemoth that is, I hate saying it, but it's the truth, the behemoth that is the Alabama Crimson Tide dead in the eye and go, every other year when you come to Jordan-Hare Stadium, you're going to get your ass kicked. Yep. And they know it because we're on equal footing with them now.
Yep.
And Coach, even during this run of Nick Saban, no one has been on more equal footing than them as a record than we have. And that's because of what Coach Dye did. And that's the most important part of that speech. And he spoke the truth that day, fellas.
Yep. He set a level of excellence. He set a standard that, despite whatever ups and downs we've had, the reason we've had the ups after the downs is because he set the standard of what the baseline for Auburn football is. I think what the baseline for the athletic department is too. he is what it is to be Auburn. He is Auburn Athletics. He is Auburn Athletics. We aren't where we are. I mean, we've all said this a million different ways now without him. And you know, it sucks that he's gone.
But when you imagine an Auburn hat, when you imagine an Auburn logo, when you imagine an Auburn shirt, like chances are it's a Pat Dye era.
Yeah.
One of those things. Yep. Or is inspired by a Pat Dye era, one of those things.
Yeah. Josh is wearing one now.
Yeah.
And oh man. Golly.
It's beyond words. It is.
It's going to miss him.
Yeah. He's
going to miss him a lot.
He's such a part of it. He's as much a part of Auburn as Samford Hall.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, and with that, I kind of want to end it because my computer's dying and I feel like we've said all there is to be said. Thanks for coming on the show, Josh and James.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Thank you for having us.
Let's do it again under more friendly circumstances.
Cheers.
So pour out something brown for Coach Dye.
Bo knows.
Love you, Coach.